So it's late the rest of the day. A guy who's... there's no one who'd say anything bad about him because there's nothing bad to say about Officer Diego Moreno. A friend of his spoke with Cairo 7.
He's... there are not enough words that can describe what a great human being he was. And the type of guy that, you know, from this day forward will only be remembered exactly as that.
Yeah. Yeah. The officer himself, Officer Diego Moreno, who lost his life protecting you, not just from criminals, but from the impotence and corruption of Dan Satterberg and Dow Constantine and Bob Ferguson. I don't mean to politicize his death. In fact, it's not political. What I'm stating for you are facts. Our area is in deep trouble, and we're losing people like this. He spoke about, Moreno did, about becoming a police officer.
I love the challenge. I love learning new things. So weren't expected. They were appreciated. At times, I felt like I didn't deserve them because I was doing my job.
And now? Through the streets of Kent, hundreds of people showed up. And they stood and they watched as a motorcade went by. And they honored an officer who shouldn't have to be out cleaning up messes like this of young people out shooting guns in parking lots in a county with a guy like Dow Constantine who said, I'm taking a pledge, zero youth incarceration. Made that statement 2 to 3 days after two young girls, teen girls, were murdered by gangs in Burien, youth gangs. And it was kids. Officer Moreno was helping to chase down. Well, they won't tell us the immigration status. And it's a fair question. And our colleague Dory Monson has been all over this, and Cairo Radio, all over it. It's a fair question. I would just opine this. If there weren't, as is the rumor, if his parents, the young man who is charged with leading to the death of Officer Moreno, if they were here legally like Officer Moreno was, the government would have told us by now, my judgment. So they lined the streets to say goodbye. Kent Police Chief Rafael Padilla spoke about Diego Moreno.
He purposely chose assignments that put him in position to care for and help people far above the traditional role of bringing bad guys to justice.
He did. Volunteered at a little gym. Worked there. It's haunting to me to know that that man's hands helped my daughter do somersaults, jump on the trampolines. I remember my wife reminded me, hey, he worked there, and I saw his face, and I saw it in that context, and I remembered thinking how cool it is that there's a strong young man in here happy to help these children. And Chief Padilla described Moreno's work habits.
Quite honestly, he did more in 8 years than most of us do in 20.
His family has said that they are reading every note that they get. His wife has said they give her comfort. There is a GoFundMe for this officer's family. If you want to give money, also leave a note, please. All you need to do is text the word Diego, D-I-E-G-O, to 800-465-8770. You will get a link to the GoFundMe. Give some money, but also leave a note. Officer Moreno's wife says they are comforting her. More from Chief Padilla.
Officer Diego was the embodiment of the American dream.
Truly he was. A legal immigrant to our country from Venezuela. A country where now they eat zoo animals. A country with no toilet paper. A country that long ago banned citizens from owning guns. A country operating under the sweet dream of people like the Bhagwan Shrill Sawant. And here he was, a successful and loved officer. The chief continued this discussion of this young man we lost too soon.
Quite honestly, he did more in 8 years than most of us do in 20.
Yeah. And then he added this, because it is our state. And it is sort of a tradition in our state. Even at a memorial service.
As a Husky fan, it pains me for what I'm about to say. But I know that if Diego was here right now, he would have already yelled this. So I'll go ahead and say it for him. Go Cougs!
Yeah. Yeah! On that day, he says these things, and it does pain a Husky to say it, I guess. Here's the thing that I know, and I know it as certain as I'm touching that mic. I will testify to you, there is an afterlife. I know it. I know it. When my father passed, when he died at the University of Washington Hospital, and I kept my promise to him, and I did not mourn his body, and my brother and his girlfriend and I, we walked away. I got out to the parking garage, and I began to laugh because I heard my father, and then I felt him, and I felt him above me, as God is my witness. I heard him laughing, and then I heard him say, I can move. My God, I can fly. And I felt him. I didn't expect to feel him. I felt him. Then I heard him. There I was in the University of Washington parking garage, laughing like a lunatic, and saying out loud, well done, Dad. My dad had had a year to prepare for that death. Officer Moreno did not. He had maybe a split second and probably never realized what was coming. But I will testify to this. There is an afterlife. And I bet you that while the audience in attendance at that memorial didn't laugh, I'll bet you that Officer Moreno did. When they said, go Cougs. I bet you he got a kick out of it. He will miss his children and his service. And they will miss him. Much more. But the blue will be there when those kids graduate from every grade. One thing about the cops, that family will never be without support from them. If you want to say goodbye, say thank you, give a little bit of money, and leave a note. Text Diego, D-I-E-G-O, to 800-465-8770. The money's fine. Make sure you leave a note. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. Spoke about it briefly last hour. Another win for the president on the policy front. They don't want to admit it, but Iran is in an absolute world of hurt. And it is a direct change in tone, attitude, and policy of the United States. Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side 94.5 FM. The text line is open 800-465-8770 and Twitter at Todd E. Herman. From the text line, hey, Todd, met you and Jason at Guns and Children Town Hall. Hey, statement. Seattle, by estimation, is a beta test for Agenda 21. Urban, high-rise, cramming, traffic blockage, testing, empty bike lanes causing traffic congestion, push for government transportation, removal of parking, paid off politicians. It all fits. Question, is there any reason no one is talking about these obvious players? A yes or no will suffice. Thank you very much. Love, Patty. Yeah, it's because people think Agenda 21 is crazy, right? And then I looked up the fact that Burien is an Agenda 21 city. A bunch of them are around here. And I think that the thinking along these lines goes that the UN is so impotent, they can't get anything done. Why would we think that we could get this going? But it doesn't matter, really, if it's Agenda 21. It doesn't. What matters is we can observe with our own eyes. We can observe these things. The Washington State power brokers, the Democrats, the progressives, the statists, do not want us living in a rural setting. That's for rich people. So you got the Hearst decision that took away the well water of normal people. Literally took it away. And it took a huge, huge, huge response and protest to get it back. That was the Seattle Supreme Court that did that, that operates out of Olympia. They certainly want us living on choo-choo train lines so that they can make their rich cronies even richer. They certainly don't want us driving. They want to track every single movement we make. They want us living in urban villages. We know all these things. So the fact is that the central planners, the statists, the statists at the UN have the same notion as the statists here. That is that you shouldn't have so many damn choices. And you certainly shouldn't be out, you know, going around gallivanting, driving where you want to go. We can't have people making those decisions. It's unseemly that Americans have all these stinking freedoms. Those freedoms don't belong in our hands. Those are for the elites because they're much smarter than us and know how to do things much, much, much better. So the president, and thanks for the text, by the way, Patty, the president is having another fairly major success on a foreign policy basis. See, it doesn't matter to me. I am so far past personality with presidents. I read their remarks. I don't watch speeches. I didn't watch Obama's speeches. And in rare occasions, when I think they're going to be funny, I will watch the president give a speech. When I think I'm going to be enthusiastic about it. Or if he's going at the media, in that way, I've adapted to really kind of enjoying that. I do. And sometimes it doesn't gel with me because it's just not a good match, me and his personality. But this performance with Iran is stunning. And the comparison of the media panicked that the president wants to talk to Iran when Obama paid them off with $150 billion in cash on pallets illegally overnight in contravention to an agreement he signed stating it's illegal to give them money or to try to circumvent this agreement. Objectively, clearly, inarguably illegal, the media doesn't care. Now we know he let them run cocaine into our country through a southern border with narco terrorists. The media doesn't care. They will not interview the reporter from the Politico who wrote the completely sourced, no anonymous sources, story about that Obama blocked their indictment. They would be in jail now. They're in prison. He blocked it. But we're to panic that President Trump wants to have a conversation with Iran. Here's where we're at with Iran. He's withdrawn us from this insane so-called agreement that Iran could end anytime they wanted. I say so-called agreement because no one can ever really look at it, and it was never really signed, so it's a so-called agreement. Now that he's done that and he is starting to put pressure on Iran, working with a coalition of Middle Eastern countries, largely Sunni Gulf states, to check Iran's ambitions. And by the way, who's Iran's partner? Russia. Since he's done that, Iran's currency this past Sunday, as Powerline blog points out, hit a record low of 100,000 reals to the dollar. And it's creating a huge economic crisis for them. It's not quite down to the level of a Venezuelan currency, but it's getting there. It's lost half its value against the dollar in just 4 months. So the government attempted to cheat to fix the rate at 42,000 in April, and it was trying to crack down on black market traders. Couldn't pull it off. They couldn't. They can't make the price fixing work. No one can. So they went and fired the head of their central bank because they're moving deck chairs around on the Titanic. That's not going to happen. The investors in Iran, people who actually have money, you know where they're parking it? The dollar. So the rich people in Iran are betting against Iran and betting in favor of the dollar, meaning betting in favor of America at this point. So the currency collapse came about after the U.S. announced in May it was going to get out of the so-called deal. Now, the president has announced that as early as August 6th and then again on November 4, he may install another range of sanctions on Iran. They are at the worst point economically that they've been in about 30 years. The change in tone is what gets me. The change in tone.
We do not pay ransom for hostages.
What about leverage? Do you do that, John Kirby at the State Department?
The way I think ransom works is you have to pay first, and then you get your hostages back, and that's not what happened here. We got our American citizens out first, and then, because we wanted to make sure we had the leverage to get them out safely...
Wait, you got them out first, and then what, John Kirby?
Out safely.
You got them out first, but then...
Make sure we had the leverage to get them out safely.
Okay, but I thought you had them.
Then the $400 million dollars that was Iran's was released to them.
Yeah, it actually wasn't Iran's because a United States court had said Iran owed families in the United States that money for being involved in the 9/11 attacks. So it wasn't Iran's money. That's a neat trick you tried to pull there. What we found out later was when they handed that money over was at the same time the hostages were handed over. It was a ransom. It was leverage. We got our hostages first, and then we gave them the money to make sure we could get out safely. Right. At night with pallets of cash. Here's your hostages. Here's your money. Now you can leave safely. The tone is remarkable. The difference in tone. The Iranian, you know, mullahs, there are a lot of things. One of them is not stupid. They understand that Trump is not Obama. We're not going to see our U.S. Navy officers apologizing for being found in international waters somewhere near Iran.
It was a mistake. That was our fault. And we apologize for our mistake. It was a misunderstanding. We did not mean to go into Iranian territorial water.
The Iranian behavior was fantastic while we were here. We thank you very much for your hospitality and your assistance.
Yeah, it sounds completely sincere. Ordered to say it, as I see it. Ordered to say it. Chain of command. Look, what gets me in all this with the media, and it gets me to the core of me, folks, we are not unable to consult the historical record and to be availed of the fact that you don't care about Iran. You're not against Obama giving them the world. You simply cannot allow Trump any sign of success. You're sick. You're ill in that regard. I waited my entire adult life during the Obama administration for a chance to say, well done, Barack. I got one time. And I said it. I said it on social media. I congratulated the president for allowing our guys to kill Osama bin Laden. He didn't stop that. He didn't start it. He didn't encourage it. He didn't want it to happen, but he didn't stop it. It actually felt good to be able to congratulate him on something. The media will never get there with Trump. Come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. You've heard now further attacks, and this is hilarious. From CNN, the author of the phrase, fully semi-automatic weapon, fully semi-auto. They have the most error-filled piece on stand your ground laws in the history of all error-filled pieces. We will go through a facts matter. Thanks for listening to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. So there's a whole bunch of talk on CNN about Stand Your Ground. They did a big piece on this. It is the most error-ridden thing that you're ever going to see about Stand Your Ground and self-defense. But luckily for you, I can press this button.
We can all agree, emotions have their place in life. But when it's time to make the big decisions, facts matter.
So Andrew Branca is a self-defense expert. He testifies in court hearings. He also writes at LegalInsurrection.com, an author in his own right, producer of videos. He went through this recent piece CNN did. It is just a clown show. Headline, what you need to know about Stand Your Ground laws. And they get right off the bat, be clowning themselves with the following statement. And I will let Andrew explain some of this from this great piece he wrote. Quoting CNN. Cases of self-defense aren't always simple, especially in states with a Stand Your Ground law. Actually, Stand Your Ground laws make it more simple. Because you only have to look at four, not five, factors in a self-defense hearing in a Stand Your Ground law. Those factors are innocence, imminence, proportionality, and reasonableness. That's all you have to look at in a Stand Your Ground state. The fifth element that you have to look at outside of Stand Your Ground states, which are the minority of states, is avoidance. Could the victim have run away? Back to CNN. Although critics of deadly use of force, or say uncalled for use of forces in cases like Draca's, the Pinellas County Sheriff declined to arrest him, citing the state's Stand Your Ground law, which gave him immunity. The decision sparked outcry and calls for reform. So, back to the fact-checking. Stand Your Ground has nothing to do with self-defense immunity, not even in the case of Florida where this occurred. There are two separate statutes for Stand Your Ground and self-defense immunity. Now we get to the true clown show portion of this. CNN supplies their own definition for Stand Your Ground. Quoting CNN. Generally, Stand Your Ground laws allow people to respond to the threats of force without fear of criminal prosecution. Wrong. There is no such factor in the law. There is always, and always will be, I think, a risk of criminal prosecution if you respond to threats of force with defensive conduct. CNN didn't even bother to get the actual definition. And they're not even done putting on the clown nose. Back to CNN. Most self-defense laws state that a person under the threat of physical injury has a duty to retreat. If after retreating the threat continues, the person may respond with force. Quoting self-defense expert, author, court expert, Andrew Branca. This is an abject untruth. A large majority of about 36 states are effectively Stand Your Ground states in that they do not impose a legal duty to retreat before acting in self-defense. Indeed, he continues, only a small minority of about 14 states impose a legal duty to retreat before using force in self-defense. Then most of those states impose that duty only in the context of the use of deadly defensive force. Now, they get to the racism. While most states provide some form of legal protection in cases of self-defense, 25 have enacted Stand Your Ground laws, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. These laws in at least 10 states, mostly in the American South, literally say you can stand your ground. So, The clowning of themselves continues. Stand your ground states are racist because they're from the South is the clear implication here. So let's go through some of the states that are stand your ground. You got your California. Is that, did they move that to the South? Did they move? No? Okay. You got your Oregon. That's weird that it's not in the South either. You got your Nevada. You got your New Hampshire. You got your Maine. You got your Washington State. Not in the South. And CNN then pretends there's something really weird about the stand your ground laws in Florida. Quote, CNN, Florida passed its stand your ground law in 2005, allowing people to meet force with force if they believe they're under the threat of being harmed. Fact, every state allows people to meet force with force if they reasonably believe they're being threatened with actual imminent harm and meet the other conditions of self-defense. There is not a factual statement in this CNN article. But for gosh sakes, let's not go around calling them fake news. Certainly not because they run little segments like this on CNN.
Now, those are single shots. If I wanted to fire this on full semi-automatic, all I do is keep firing. Now, I won't probably hit the target when I do this, but I'm going to fire about five shots.
Okay. It's a weapon designed to inflict maximum damage.
Yep, it is. And by the way, they could find someone from the military who mouthed the words, spoke the words full semi-auto, and by the way, didn't properly hold the weapon, nor did they actually hit center mass, and the guy was standing about 11 feet away. That takes some work. I think you're finding someone maybe didn't spend a lot of time in combat or shooting. No offense at all to folks who served in that capacity. I'm just saying, but to say full semi-auto, there's no such thing. But are we to be surprised when people like Kevin DeLeon, a California politician, can get up in front of the entire world and speak thusly?
This right here has ability with a 30 caliber clip to disperse with 30 bullets within half a second.
Wow. So it's an automatic weapon, but it's not. It can't disperse 30 bullets in half a second. He went on to say that it can also disperse clips. Never seen that in a gun. And, of course, we all remember Dianne Feinstein.
If you want to protect yourself, get a double-barrel shotgun.
And Biden.
You don't need an AR-15. It's harder to aim.
Yeah.
It's harder to use.
Yeah.
And, in fact, you don't need 30 rounds to protect yourself. Buy a shotgun.
What do you tell Jill?
We have federal.
Remember that? Told her to fire it up in the air. And here we are, my favorite part of the show. I get to hear your longer form communication with us. Emails, therman@ktth.com or Facebook notes, facebook.com/Todd Herman Show. The text messages, those are strewn throughout the program, sprinkled on top of the recipe of the show like a fine spice, as well as the tweets at Todd E. Herman. Start off on email from P, letter P. I don't say last names in emails. So it's letter P from Bo on the free stuff conundrum. This is a great note. Hey, Todd, my thought, if the Democratic Socialist Ocasio-Cortez or Senator Bernie Sanders somehow gets their way and everyone gets a guaranteed income, then their argument for free education would be moot. Education for what? Who would be motivated to get a job if income is guaranteed whether one works or not? Socialism is the best example of dumbing down a society. No, it's a great point. It is a great point. We are told all the time, at least I was growing up, don't feed wild animals because they grow dependent upon you. Now, certainly we're not animals and we have a responsibility to care for, well, maybe responsibility to care for animals, but also for our fellow human. But to not do that in a way that dehumanizes them, that takes from them the need to pursue their own lives, right? There's such a thing as a helping hand. Then there's this other thing where you just teach people that their experience in life is subsistence. That is such an act of cruelty that all you can ever expect in life is the things that someone else hands you. That is instantly depressing for people. I exist to be fed like a plant. I totally agree with you, P. Thank you for the notes. Now to Michelle from Kirkland, Washington. Dear Todd, I remain confused, as was the other emailer, about your position on gun safes. Now I hear you saying that you are irresponsible if you don't lock up your guns. How then can you possibly be against a law to force people to lock up their guns? Please explain that to me. Michelle. All right, Michelle, thank you for the note. Thank you for listening to someone you apparently disagree with on this issue. I will tell you why. It's because the legislation behind this has nothing to do with solving a problem. One cannot regulate the activities of a person in their home. This will change zero behaviors. If someone decides they want to commit suicide and they have their gun locked and they're safe, they go get the gun out. If a family member, God forbid, decides they want to commit suicide and the gun safe is locked, they'll choose another methodology. It may not be as quick, but it can just be as convenient. Stand in front of a train, go jump off something high, take pills. There's a lot of ways to do that. So the legislation is in search of a problem it can solve. Now, it may keep a kid from getting in touch with a weapon. It might, right? Now, if that happened, okay, minor victory. But the legislation, as it's written, Michelle, is not about locking up your guns when you're not using them. The legislation, as it's written, is about locking up your guns, period. And I will not put myself in a position where, if God forbid, the unthinkable happens, someone tries to, you know, break into our house, where I have to try to unlock a gun safe. It's an extra step in an already stressful process I'm not going to go through when it comes to defending my family. Lastly, the bill on the Seattle level is illegal. Cities, as three Supreme Court justices have written and affirmed that it's in our Constitution, cities don't get to make gun laws. Okay, they don't get to make gun registration laws in this state. The state law, the so-called safe storage law, it's an abomination. It's 17 subjects, or at least our state requires initiatives to have one subject. And it is a massive perversion of freedom, such as if you decide to exercise your Second Amendment rights to purchase a weapon, boom, you give up your health care privacy. No one's going to abide by that. It's radically unconstitutional. So for those reasons, I do not stand with this. And on a bigger basis, it's not the government's business what I do in my house. It's not. It is my business what I do in my house. Now, I think you should have a gun safe. I think if you don't, I think you're irresponsible. That's me. Now on to Peter from Issaquah, Washington. Dear Todd, made my first trip downtown Seattle in about 15 years. You are not exaggerating. My wife and I took a tour of where we used to go when we were courting. I love that word, by the way, Peter, courting. My wife and I would walk the waterfront together, holding hands and thinking about our future. Here we are now with two kids, and I am absolutely certain I would never take my children downtown. When I hear you on the radio talking about the madness at Seattle, you'll forgive me if I think some of it is entertainment. What I saw in a single three-hour session downtown, I saw people injecting heroin, I assume, into their veins. I saw a man urinating in the public market by where people purchase food. I saw what I'm sure was a drug deal going down, and I saw countless people laying passed out on the streets. It is not a safe place for families. It is not someplace I'd take my kids. I guess what I'm saying to you is maybe you need to have less fun with the topic and tell people that city is dying. Thanks for what you do, and thanks for doing it on the air so we can all observe it. Hey, Peter, thanks for the note. Love your little town of Issaquah. Used to be a little town. It's not really anymore, is it? Look, how much more clear can I make it? There's a Detroiting of Seattle going on. Okay? It is a Detroiting. Sooner or later, this stuff collapses because it has to collapse. Cities cannot continue to have the ultra-rich and the ultra-poor. Seattle is leaking the middle class, and they should be. The rich people here who are lazy, and, well, I shouldn't say all of them. There's a laziness and there's an arrogance within the rich earners in the city. They don't have time to focus on the unintended consequences of their throwing money at things. They think that when you get money, you manage it well, because they do. Their businesses largely manage money well. Their nonprofits, their venture capital firms largely manage money well. So I think it's inconceivable to them to understand the degree of fraud that exists within the Seattle City Council and at the level of the King County, of King County, like, you know, smack daddy Dale Constantine. I truly think they've bought the insane dream that $1 billion, well, they don't even know that. They've bought the insane dream that we just need more money, because they don't take the time to spend 15 minutes reading about the fact that Seattle is importing heroin users, importing drug cartels, and doing nothing to stem the tide of people flowing into our city. Close things off with a private Facebook note from Tina in Spokane. Dear Todd, have you ever thought of syndicating your program to Spokane? I get a huge laugh out of Seattle's spirit, but I got to let you know, I think you lived in Spokane once. We are headed the Seattle spirit way. You may not know this, but there were activists in our city who tried to give our Spokane River human rights. They wanted the river to be treated as a person. Keep up the good work. We enjoy listening to you over here. Tina, thank you for the notes. Haven't thought about that. I haven't thought about syndicating the show. I know that there are people who've done that across the state before. I think one of my friends in talk radio did it. It's nice that you say that, but look, it can be syndicated already. You're already proof positive of that. I assume you stream the show. You can also tell your friends in Spokane. Get the podcast. Just email the, or no, not email. Text the word podcast to 800-465-8770. And I'll send you a link to my podcast and that of our morning show host, Jason Rantz. Up next on the Todd Herman Show, man, there's a beautiful park in Seattle. It doesn't have any needles in it. Doesn't have any people passed out. Doesn't have any tents. No RVs. How is that possible? Could it be that it's just down the street from a politician's house? Give the details next in the Todd Herman Show, AM 770 KTTH, and on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM.